one of me and nothing behind. There's a woman on my lap and she's drinking champagne. That white skin got assassin's eyes. I'm looking up into the sapphire tinted skies. I'm well dressed, waiting on the last train. Standing on the gallows with my head in the moon. Any minute now I'm expecting all hell to break loose. People are crazy and times are strange. I'm locked in tight, I'm out of range. I used to care, but things have changed.
Oh yeah, that's right, ladies and gentlemen. Bob Dylan is speaking the words that I'm thinking at this very second. Welcome back. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
You guys are listening to Carolyn Joe! Woohoo! Hey! Hey, everybody. Hope you're doing well out there. As y'all know, if you're tuning into this show, my name is Joe Carabello. I'm a filmmaker, a photographer, a writer, sometimes an artist, a con artist. But today, I'm still definitely in the band Monday Mistress, but today I am a podcaster. Across from me, and still in her cage, still in her soundproof booth, the super artistic, ultra talented, one and only, the super special, one of a kind, Carolyn Bolesky. How are you doing, Carolyn?
I'm doing good, Joe. How is everyone else out there doing? Like, I can hear you, but I hope you're doing good.
They're doing fine.
You're doing great. Yes, that's the spirit. So, Joe, do you ever feel like you do too much? Because, like, you do so much. Even in your intro, you're, like, 10 things.
No, because, like, I've brainwashed myself into thinking that it's really just all one thing. Like, whether it's filmmaking, whether it's photography, whether it's, you know, creating stories, it is still, I'm still just, you know, I guess in a way, I'm still just telling a story. I've always focused on being able to tell a story in some way or form, and these are all just the medium. So mentally, I'm tricking myself into thinking that's what it is.
Yeah.
And that's really what it is. I mean,
that is what it is.
We can go a different angle. How, I mean, I was just listening to Robert Rodriguez during like the, I forget what speech he was doing, but he you know, he has to face the same exact question that, you know, people would always ask him, like, if, you know, you do so many things, like, what do you really do? And there's that, you know, that saying that I hate so much to this very day.
Master of none.
Yeah, the jack of all trades, master of none. I still think that's such a bullshit. It's such a bullshit phrase, because it's like, just because it rhymes, you think people think, oh, just because, you know what I mean? Just because mm-hmm. people make it sound charming, we all know that's still manipulating people. The guys still think it's very possible to do that, but he brought up that idea, but it was someone else saying, like, the king of nothing or something like that. But he said, like, but he does do one thing. He's a creative. So his job is to be a creative person.
Well, it's funny that saying, I feel like, is an old school term, because nowadays, even if you look just in any job sector, they're like, can you do this, 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 and this? And know this program, this program, this program, and this program? It's like they're basically requiring you to at least be three positions in one.
They're like forcing it upon us, really.
Yeah.
Because at the same time, they're not willing to pay for the extra arms that it would. So they're trying to make sure this one hand can use all of its fingers to do as much typing, as much, you know what I mean?
It's like, I've legit seen job descriptions out there for, like, writer, editor, social media expert, designer, film editor, and like all this, and like basically like all the jobs in one anyway.
Yeah,
you know, so it's like
that's what people want. So then, like, yeah, for people to say, like, oh, you know, that lame ass saying again, like, jack of all trades. See, it used to be, it's funny, because when I first heard that phrase, actually, it wasn't until like several years ago that I heard the second half of that. I usually just heard, like, oh, you're really a jack of all trades, aren't you? Like, you know, like, people are like, you're a jack of all trades. And it's crazy how, like, growing up, I never really thought I had many talents. So, you know, I'd like comics and I'd like to draw, and those are the things I just, like, focused on, you know, just doing those things. And I never really thought, like, I had anything else beyond that. And so when I started learning new skills, I felt good about that. But then at the end of that, like later on, you know, when you get more of these skills, like you know, like in video games, you get more skills, you build the skills so you can beat the big boss. But then apparently in the future, if you still have all these skills, people try to turn their back on it and be like, oh, but you're a master of none of them. I feel like that was a made up phrase from someone who was jealous about someone who has...
Someone couldn't do it all.
Yeah, or they couldn't do more than one. And they're like, well, I can rhyme too, you know, and they changed that. And I felt like that's what it was. Someone tried to, you know, basically like clip them. Like they tried to like cut their feet out.
Well,
you know?
Hold that thought for one moment because I hear the news music playing, which means I have news. Guys, can you believe it's already halfway through April? And that is crazy because that means that this year is already one third over. And I am amazed. But guess what? A month from now, May 21st and May 22nd, Joe and I will be embarking on the 2016 Curl Studio Tour at our first stop, Tidewater Comic-Con in Virginia Beach, Virginia. That's going to be very exciting because we have never done that show before and I've heard it's a good show, so I figured why not try it? And we have never even been on that far out on the East Coast in Virginia to ever show our comics, so hopefully we'll be gaining some new audiences there. Joe, when was the last time you were in Virginia Beach?
Never.
You've never been there?
No, I've been there before.
Oh, okay. Well, I remember, did you ever go in the haunted house there? They have like a haunted house in the corner.
That's like my only memory of Virginia
Beach. Oh, really?
Beach.
You're like, the haunted house is there. Well, maybe we'll have to check it out from a new perspective.
It wasn't really a place that I was like, I need to go to Virginia Beach. I don't know why.
Well, you know, maybe we'll check it out now that it's been some years now and we're adults. We can check it out. See what's going down in Virginia Beach at Tidewater Comic-Con. Again, that's May 21st and 22nd. And then a weekend goes by. And then the next weekend is June 3rd, 4th, and 5th. We will be at AwesomeCon in Washington, D.C. at the D.C. Convention Center. And that's metro accessible for everyone in the Washington metropolitan area. That means you, Virginia and Maryland. We hope to see you there because how can you not be at AwesomeCon? Everyone's at AwesomeCon. Everyone is at AwesomeCon and you need to be there. So those are our upcoming tour dates. In the fall, we're also going to be at SPX, New York Comic Con, and Baltimore.
You forgot to mention Free Comic Book Day.
Yes, I did because I don't have it on my list yet. But yes, we will be
at... Don't forget about it.
Oh my goodness, because that's actually the first thing. Yes, Free Comic Book Day. Let's see. That's always the first Saturday in May, which is May 7th. And we will be at the Amazing Comic Shop, and that is near George Mason in University Mall area in Fairfax, Virginia.
It's in the intersection of Braddock Road and Ox Road.
Yes, and... This might be, you guys might not know it as the Amazing Comic Shop, but it's also was formerly known as Laughing Ogre / Phoenix Comics, because they kept the sign up for all those years. It was always Phoenix Comics, then it went to Laughing Ogre, and now it is the Amazing Comic Shop. So that should be exciting, and we were there last year and had a great time. That's always like, to me, the kickoff of summer, because there's a horse race later that day. It feels like just there's a lot going on that Saturday. Yeah. So, again, that's May 7th is Free Comic Book Day. You know, I'm so excited about that. I can't believe I, like, didn't even have it on my list yet. And I need to put that out there to the world.
You need to put that on the list, man. That's the first stop, isn't it?
Yeah, technically, that is the first. It's not a Comic-Con, yeah, but it's an event.
And the people over at Amazing Comic Shop always treat us so great. You know, really appreciative of, like, everything they've done. The people who hustle there are the greatest.
Yeah, last year, there was a lot going on, too, because, like, first of all, the store was just, like, packed. Not to, like, discourage you from going. It wasn't, like, to the point where you'd have to wait for hours and hours, but, you know, it was action-packed. People were out and about, and it was fun, and comics were flying off the shelves, and they also had a whole bunch of cosplayers and Star Wars, like, that union came by, and also they were doing some podcast outside, and it was action-packed. There was people everywhere. And also they renovated the University Mall area, so there is a really cool statue of a frog outside. If you haven't seen it, I would say like that might help, you know, if you need to come by and see that frog statue, that might be an influencer. Because not only is it Free Comic Book Day, but there's a frog statue outside in that pavilion area. Would that make you want to come, Joe?
Yeah.
Because, I mean, I always, like, whenever I see that frog, I'm like, he makes me instantly happy.
Come for the frog.
Come for the frog, stay for Carolyn and Joe.
And also get free comics.
And get free comics. They always have some good selections. I don't know what's selected for this year. They probably have it up on their website for Free Comic Book Day because they pre-announce what they're going to distribute. And I don't know the rules because each store is different. If you're not in the Fairfax area and can't make it out to the Amazing Comic Shop, you can check out what your local store is. Just Google Free Comic Book Day and they should have a comic store locator. You can put in your zip code and we'll find one for you. But yeah, each store has different rules that day, but usually, you know, you can grab like 3 or 4 comics that are selected from their Free Comic Book Day selection. It's pretty awesome. It's a great way to get people into comics and read comics, and they have stuff for adults and stuff for kids. And a lot of the shops have parties and cake and just good times had by all. I've been seeing some crazy stuff happening at Free Comic Book Day, like, around the nation.
It really is a great... I feel like it's such a fun day. People can... You know, it's the uniting of everyone who could possibly be future fans of any books, you know?
Yeah. And also, like, people love free stuff. So, of course, it's... You know, if they even read, like, one comic from that, that's pretty awesome.
That's all. It always just starts with one book.
Yeah. And sometimes stores have sales on top of that too, like they might have back issues on sale or, you know, whatever deals that they're having. So check with your stores to see what's up.
And maybe we might have some special too.
Yeah.
Carol maybe. And I combined always have a lot of stuff that we can show off, let the world know about.
What should we, we need to talk about this. I'm getting excited because it's like soon. It's all sneaking up on me. That's how I feel like it has been for the past year. As much as I try to plan, it sneaks up, and all of a sudden, boom, Free Comic Book Day.
I mean, hopefully it's sunny. It's always been pretty good weather.
Last year was nice. Yeah, I don't remember ever having a devastating Free Comic Book Day.
I almost feel like Free Comic Book Day, at the end of the day, there should be like an after party.
No, like the whole day is a party, though.
But like after the store, there should be an after party.
What would you do?
I don't know, just a place where you can relax and not have to, just continue the good time.
Yeah. I usually, like, just remember at the end of the day watching the horse race. I can't remember what it is if it's, like, I think it's Belmont. There's, like, because there's 3 different races in horse racing. It's Belmont. I don't know the order, but it's basically Belmont, Kentucky Derby, and the Preakness. So one of those is that day. But, yeah, it's for, like, the whole Triple Crown. It's going to be exciting. But last year there was a Triple Crown winner,
yeah,
which like never happens.
I don't really pay attention to that as much, but I remember that happening as well.
It's exciting. I actually don't remember the name of that horse, which I feel like I should know. Because do you remember like a few years ago there was a horse that was like in the running and everyone was pulling for him?
I feel like there's always that chance every year now, right? I feel like there's always something like that.
Yeah. Man. All those horses. I remember there was like Silver Charm. He won like 2 of them, but he didn't win the 3rd one.
Yeah, I don't know any of the names.
I know Silver Charm because he was awesome, and he was like Bob Baffert's horse.
Yeah.
I know some, like,
that's,
I don't
that's
know
the
enough.
Extent of my, what you just said is the extent of anything.
Like, Bob Baffert, we know him because he has like a personality, but it's almost like in different industries, you almost have to have like a really huge personality for people like outside of that industry to know who you are.
I feel like that's the key, really, is you got to be able to separate yourself.
You got to Donald Trump yourself.
It's personality or just something that makes you stand out. Because that's what's interesting is, you know, you grow up and people are like, you need to be like everyone else. But then like your success is based on what makes you different than everyone else.
Yeah.
That's really what the marketing is all about. Unless you want to blend, like the easy money is like the, I guess the easy money is doing exactly what everyone's supposed to do on the whole, you know, on the plane, but to make it big,
and
the key word breakout, you know?
But then if you stand out and like don't garner that type of big attention, people are just like, what a weirdo. It's like you have to like make it work for you.
But then if you're classified as a weirdo, then you just have to establish your name even further because people will still be able to like, people will still be able to say, like, you know, and I've always appreciated this, and I don't know if, I mean, I'm, for my work, I've heard people say like, oh, I can always pick out like a Joe Carbeo photo, or I can pick out like his writing, or that's like a line that he would say. And I think that's a cool thing, you know, to be able to establish a voice. And I think that's what that I think is important, because if you don't stand out, if it's not interesting, hopefully people find my work interesting in that way. I'm not really my I hope, you know, that's what the hope is. But like, I think that's the key, is to finding something that makes you not like, you know, if you see a whole bunch of people drawing Spider-Man, like you see all the books and you can't tell the difference between the artists, you know, then you're just like, you're just doing your job.
So back to what we were talking about in the lead in to the show, we were talking about the Master of None comment and how it's frustrating.
No, see, like, I feel like that they made that. That's just a phrase. I look at it now that I've thought about it. I feel like that Master of None was legit created by someone who had to make a response against someone who had that talent, who has that, what is that, where you're like
a Renaissance man?
Yeah.
Is that what that means? Like, you're just like, oh, I can do it all.
There's another.
I have skills.
There's a cooler word than that. I forget what it is. Not a protege, but it was something where like, it's funny because I've always brought this up, or I brought it up recently because I felt like it's the best rebuttal for this. It always appears like in the professional
like a
world.
Phenom?
No, but like,
I was trying to think of, like, you said it wasn't protege, so maybe it's phenom because it starts with a P too.
Something like that, but like musically, I think it has more it's more of like a music word. But like I say, I guess in the arts or whatever, if a person does multiple things, people are like, oh, you do, or professional things, they're like, oh, you do a lot, but you're a master of none of them. But like, how come when in the music world, if you can play multiple instruments, if you can do drums, guitar, piano, and play the harp and stuff like that, people are like, oh my God, he's so great. He can do all these things amazingly.
Genius.
Yeah, but they praise him there. But then outside world, you know, in the civilian world, then they frown upon like, oh, the person's jack of all trades, but master of none. You know, I'm like, why is it in the music? And the instrument, they're like, wow, it's so great. He can play so many. They pat him on the back. But then outside, like in the professional world, they're sort of like, they piss on that.
Well,
I feel like they piss on it now.
Well, there's another saying, too, that always kind of frustrated me. When I first heard it, I was like, that's clever. Like same thing with Master of None. But then when I started thinking about it, I'm like, well, it's that saying that says, like, those who can do, those who can't teach.
Yeah.
And something, like, when I first heard that, I thought it was clever, because it was, like, flipped around. I was like, oh, that's funny. But then, like, the more I think about it, I'm like, that's kind of, like, rude, you know? Because it's, like, there's some
rude
teachers that, like, that's, like, you know, in defense of teachers, like, that's somebody's job, and, like, they're actually trying to, like, mold young minds and share their skills with other people. Like, in my head, I'm like, they don't necessarily have to do that, you know what I mean? Like, they don't have to go out of their way to, like, teach somebody how to do something. You know, and then usually with art, what I've found is a lot of students actually emulate their teachers. And especially with illustration, like I found just by observing like other illustrators, it feels like they just copy what their teachers are creating. And I felt like even like I went to VCU, and I felt like a lot of the illustrators, a lot of them do have like their own, you know, signature visual style, but it still felt like everybody kind of had the same underlining style. It's almost like if you want that look, you know, go to that school and then you get that look, and you can branch off from there. And even with the design department, which was what I was in, there is definitely like, I don't know how it is right now necessarily, but there was a period of time where it has like that VCU look, and it's like, you know, that whole based off of like Swedish design, they love that universe typeface, you know, very clean but inventive, and that's people want these
days. But where do you think that comes from? I mean, if you were to diagnose where that phrase of like those who can do, those who can't, they teach, where do you think that, how do you decipher
that probably,
the beginning of that?
The beginning of that probably came from, and this might be rude, and it probably is that maybe the person that came up with that is like, hey, I'm working in the field, and people that still work in that medium or that field, they love it, but they just couldn't find work to actually work in it, so they teach it.
I mean, and let's take...
And it makes kind of sense. It depends on the teacher, because I have run into a few teachers, like, let's take advertising, for example. there might be, you know, if you're really working in advertising in like 24/7, there's no way, first of all, that I don't really think you can have time to teach. I mean, maybe you can, but it seems very hard in that industry. So I don't know how you can be working at an ad agency and teaching on the side. Maybe you can, but it, like I said, it just seems kind of slightly impossible to be doing it at such a high level and teach.
I mean, that's to me, that's absolutely true. It's like, for me, I mean, teaching is, that'll be nice, solid thing. But at the same time, you're not out there, you know, in the trenches doing what you want to do.
Yeah.
I mean, I understand the both ways. If you are doing it, you're already working there. You can't teach. You know what I mean? Just, you know, logistically, you just can't, because you're doing the job that you went to school to do. But then there's also that the other angle of it, of basically the people who weren't good enough. They're like, well, I guess I'll just get a, because, you know, when you have a certain amount of credits, some people go to school so they can just be a teacher. But also there's literally the like, I'm not good enough, but I'm good enough to teach, or I just can't get the work.
Or they like, it's easier to do they that. they know the profession, the
textbook,
but they just don't really know how it's like to really work in the field. There's that. I'd say there's that type of teacher, but I do think there is a certain type of personality that wants to actually help kids and really they are just really good teachers and they want to share the wealth of knowledge. And I think that those people are out there. So there's that type of teacher. And I do think that there are also, I hate to say it, but there are probably fraud teachers who might know a little bit about something, but not fully know. And then, like, they're out there teaching these classes.
And, you know, and the honest truth is, a lot of times in that type of situation, I find that it's not their fault. They're going to go and take a job. They need money. They're going to take a job. They're not the one hiring, but they took the job. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
The people who are hiring them should have realized, like, maybe this person's not qualified. But maybe they're just like, well, we got to fill this gap. Whatever. Just put them in there and just have the class watch a movie.
Yeah.
You know, something like that. I mean, I know at least in my experience, a lot of times, even, like, going through film school, you're just like, okay, we're just sitting here watching movies.
Yeah.
Like, logistically, I could just sit here and watch movies and overanalyze it and do stuff like that. I really wanted to get my hands dirty in film. You know what I mean? And that's doing it. I went out of my way to do stuff like that. So I'm so used to that work ethic. I don't know why it's entrenched in me, because I feel like, to go back to like the master of the what's it called? The jack of all trades.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like for me personally, the reason why, if people can call me a jack of all trades, the reason why I became that is because I didn't have people around me that could do the things I need to get done. So I had to, like, you know what I mean? I was like, maybe it's just my lack of being able to communicate certain things, or my lack of trust, or just maybe I didn't have the people. I was like, well, you know, I came up wanting to draw. Then after that, photography. Then I got into music. It's just like all these things I wanted to do in my lifetime. I just wanted to continuously do that in the future. And they just all happen to be able to work in the same medium. You know what I mean? This is filmmaking or film production, like sound, drawing. You know, all that just comes together like that. So it became logical for me for all that to come together. It was just, it's like, for me, it was the same with Robert Rodriguez. It's like, well, I can play guitar. I don't need to be able to tell someone how to do it. I can figure it out. And if I know the know-how, it saves time. You know?
I feel like there are certain people in this world that can have like 3, 4, or 5 things that they are really good at.
Yeah, and they like, can have more than that.
Well, I mean, who knows how much more you can have, but like,
it's, you can have it's, a lot
it
more.
I don't know. It seems like for me, maybe like 5 might be enough, and then it's kind of like, then it's like, whoa, how much more can you do?
I feel like you got to decipher what exactly is the trade that you're doing. What are the skills that you're doing?
Of course, it overlaps. Like, you know, let's just say like photography and film. I'm not saying that that's the same thing, but they do overlap.
Yeah, but let's break it down.
And then there's lighting.
Photography and film. Okay, that's cool. That's composition. Like, the best way to do composition is just drawing. You can visualize that, you know. Sound, again, that's also the artistry of hearing and proper hearing and knowing the to create a soundscape. You know, those are great skills. That involves listening. I'm like, this, the jack of all trades is a wonderful thing, because I feel like the more trades that you know, the And the more that you can absorb yourself to so many crafts out there, the more that makes your focus, when you finally focus on the final piece, such a tapestry, a massive tapestry of pieces, of elements that can come together, as opposed to someone just saying like, I'm a filmmaker, but I like guitar, and I'm only going to just do guitar stuff and know all about that. So that'll be your only influence, is like, now I'm just going to write a blues song. But now how are you supposed to write from, how are you supposed to create from the outside perspective of that?
Yeah, you got to be like a pocket knife and have all of it.
I remember I was watching the MTV cartoon and also the comic book adaptation of The Max. And there was a character in there called Sarah. And when they first introduced that character, Sarah, she was underneath a bridge, or she was like sitting underneath an underpass. And she started out the episode started out with the line, "My name is Sarah, and I'm sitting underneath an underpass because I want to be a writer. And as a writer, I need to experience what it is to be underneath an underpass." And I think that's partially, and that's absolutely true. It's like, how are you supposed to be a three-dimensional creator if you haven't, you know, you don't know how it is to be underneath the underpass. You know what I mean? How are you supposed to, you know, I feel like your inspiration is going to run out if you didn't have such an experience of jack of all trades, you know, or at least the attempt of doing that.
So when someone says to you, "Oh, you're a jack of all trades," but then they leave out master of none, is that a compliment still to you? Or does it remind you of the whole phrase?
No, I don't really, people don't really call that anymore. They mainly say like, "Oh, I've seen your stuff. You do a lot of work."
That's good. But that's good.
You do a lot of work. And that's why a lot of times it makes it really challenging for me to say, like, when someone's like, "So, what have you been up to?" And I'm like, I really can't even, I literally don't know the proper way at this point to say like, "Oh, so what have you been up to?" Now I just go and just attack it from a human level. I'm doing great. I just had like a sandwich. That was a good sandwich. Because I don't want to be a person that's just like, now I'm just going to talk about work or what I'm doing, because everything I do is what I'm doing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But I don't want to be like, I don't want to have the perception of that's all I'm going to be focused on. But at the same time, I don't know how to actually go at the conversation properly, because I don't want to attempt to talk over their head, or I don't want, you know what I mean? I want to be able to connect with them. Yeah. I don't want to, that's the whole point of communication, is to be able to connect. And I don't understand when people don't try to, I do understand why they try to talk over someone or try to make them feel big so they can feel big. But I'm not, that's not my goal. My goal is to be able to connect with people. At least at that moment, I want to connect.
Yeah. And also one more thing I wanted to say about that teacher thing. I feel like there are some teachers that just love that whole education side of things, and they want to be in that safety net of a school and get their tenure, and they don't, like, I had a few professors that were really great. Like, almost every teacher I had in college was really great in the art department. But there were a few that it almost seemed like they did work a lot of industry jobs, and it's almost like they just wanted to get out. Like, they did it for, like, a handful of years, and then they're just like, "I'm going to teach now."
No.
Like, it's almost like they are just, I don't want to say burnt out, but they were just like, "Let's just do something different. I can still do design, but I don't have to be in the trenches."
Now, for me, like, I thought about teaching, like, the idea of teaching. Like the idea of the, like, the actual, what does not attract me is, like, the actual, like the school I hate, because I really don't like the life of being in a school and anything like that. But I really do love the idea of what it is to be a teacher. And that's really, to me, it's really attractive. And being a teacher can come from all shapes and sizes. It doesn't have to be like in a classroom. But when I broken down what makes being a teacher really awesome, to me, a teacher should inspire. That to inspire to keep searching and learning. If a teacher can't do that, if they can't inspire someone to continue, then what's the freaking point? Like, to me, whenever I've taught any class, my point has always been to blow their minds of an idea. To be like, "See, listen, you thought," to be like, to basically reveal and say like, "Hey, you thought this was difficult? I know you thought math or this, whatever this angle, whatever this problem we're doing is difficult, but look, there's an amazing solution." Like, you know, like, discovery is such an amazing thing. And I feel like to inspire people as a teacher, that's the goal, man. Not to like torture people or do anything like that, because, but like that can happen. And I think that's almost this old school way of
doing it. The teachers that, like, really push you.
But, like, I remember watching so many episodes of television where they have that great teacher, and you're like, wow, man, that's...
Like Mr. Feeny.
Yeah, like, stuff like that. But, like, every show has a great, like, teacher, like a rebellious teacher, or one that just, like, really teaches you those lessons. And that's, like, if I was to be a teacher, I'd be like that guy. I want to be that person that's, like, that would come at the problem at a different way, or just, to teach discipline and inspire at the same time, to make people realize there's different angles, there's new ways of thinking, there's unique things, it's not as dull as it can be, but you also have to make it exciting for yourself. But whenever I've done anything as a teacher, that's how I get into the mindset, is how can I make their minds, like, open up to, like, new possibilities in the universe, or, you know, what can inspire them? Because if you don't inspire them, because for me, I need to be inspired. If I'm not inspired to do something, I don't do it. So I feel like I need to inspire people to continuously live life, or else why live it all?
You are a great teacher from what I've seen, because you have...
How, like, so? How many students have I had? How many people do I have left? I have nobody left.
That's not true.
Nobody left.
No, that's not true, because you did some of the summer sessions.
Where are they now?
I'm just saying, you have done teaching.
I think
you've even, like, showed me how to use stuff, and I think you do a great job of all that, and the way you direct is really great, the way you talk to people. But I feel the same way with you also about teaching, in terms of, like, teaching does sound great in theory, but then I look at the school systems now, and I'm like, do I really want to, like, be with those kids? Because, like, I don't know, it's just small things that you hear about that happen in schools. It's like, you could say one thing, and then, like, that makes this kid really upset at you. Like, and even though you weren't trying to, like, say anything horrible, like, to them, but they interpret it some crazy way. And then I've also heard stories of, like, kids who, like, don't show up in class, and, like, they're not really the best students, they don't do their work.
See, that's
and
when it becomes babysitting, right?
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I was saying, then they complain to the school that, like, oh man, I got a D, I didn't deserve this, and then, like, they have to fight the school, and, like, usually the kid wins and ends up getting, like, a B or a C, and even though they, like, never even came to class. Like, I've heard of those stories, and they're, like, they're crazy. Like, I don't understand why you can think that you would get a good grade if you didn't show up, and stuff like that. Like, and I've heard, like, nightmare stories about some of these kids, and, like, you know, like, or, like, you high five a kid, and then they're like, oh, he touched me. You know, it's like, who knows what the heck is going on with these stories. But at the same time, you have to believe the kids, because it's like, stuff like that happens. So it's like, you have to trust whatever the kid is saying, because that's the environment we lived in these days. But I just don't want to deal with any of that red tape and all that junk. That's what, honestly, is probably, like, I'm not saying that I, like, fully want to be a teacher, but, like, if there's anything that is preventing me from doing that, it's, like, all this legal stuff that seems to happen in the schools these days. And like you're saying, babysitting, especially for art classes, and especially on the high school level, at least in college, hopefully people are there for a reason and they want to be there. But in high school, it seems like a lot of people have always said, like, oh, do art, it's so easy, everyone gets an A, and then people just want that. And I get it, but also it's like, I cared about art in high school, but there are those kids that you remember from school that just, like, sat there with nothing else going for them.
See, like, to me, that's what opened my eyes, like, from going from high school to college, when I realized, like, hey, I'm paying to be here, I should pay attention. And from a teacher's perspective, it's probably really amazing, like, when you're a teacher in college, or a person who's doing a workshop where people have to show, people pay to be there and listen to you. It must be great, because people are actually listening. And I bet that's the greatest, those are the greatest people to teach, are the people that actually are there to pay attention and learn from you.
Yeah.
And I feel like when you go to high school and stuff like that, like, when it becomes like that babysitting, and you really want to inspire them, and you think that in this book that you're trying to tell them, this novel or this photo book or these artists that you're trying to tell them about, like, or even in civics or history, like, history could be really amazing. But I remember back then, I didn't want to listen about history. You know what I mean? I was growing up. I didn't care about that. But now when I ask about history, which is really great right now, is that there's so many, since I didn't really pay attention in history or any of that shit back in high school, and I ask, honestly, people like, hey, so, you know, like, when I ask them, like, so people just vote and it doesn't, like, I give them an honest, logical question that they have to answer if they know all about it, and I get to find out for real in my own, I guess, adult brain. Because I bet back then in high school I wasn't really retaining any of that information, but now I feel like I can comprehend things, and I can sort of suss out, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense at all. Or, dude, the back in, like, so you tell me these people, like, buried their own, like, you had to, like, the Egyptians had their own, like, slaves and servants, like, they got buried with them down below. Mm-hmm. It's more exciting to me now because, like, I can feel the full range of, like, the importance of it. But, like, back then, I was like, oh, cool, like, Egypt, that's great. But now I'm like, you know, because it just doesn't, it's...
Because you're looking at it from story perspective now rather than just memorizing facts. That's the thing I didn't like about high school, was that it was just all memorization.
Well, just memorizing facts is not, to me, it's not living it. And, like, to me, I feel like now when I'm living it in a conversation, I can remember it and it feels real. But if I'm just like, read this book, memorize the book.
See, that's what I didn't like about all those classes, too, and that's why I had a struggle, because I can remember some things, but, like, I don't remember a lot. Like, I can't just sit and memorize, like, math equations and numbers. I'm just not I don't think like that. Like, my brain doesn't hook up like that.
Well, that's the whole point. It's, like, it's one thing for, you know, it's one thing to memorize, like, the aquatic, whatever, equacket, but the equations to solve problems, that's great. But the real thing is, how do you even use it in real life? And, like, to me, that was always the first question. Is like, how am I supposed to use this? Like, geometry, I can comprehend how, you know, like, that. That's why geometry made a lot of sense to me, because it makes sense. But when you're doing, like, algebra and you get, it makes sense to a degree, but it gets complex. But, like, you know, when
try
you put
trigonometry.
It, but when you put it into, like, real life, well, it's like, I need a goal, you know? It's like everything. You're trying to make, you know, you're teaching a movie class, you're teaching filmmaking because you want to make a movie. You want to make the best freaking movie. So all the common goal is there. You know what I mean? The common goal is like, you want to communicate. You want to communicate the script and this idea, and you want it to be cool or boring, whatever your direction may be. So, you know, the point is to teach people how to use those tools to communicate with that. So thus, they got to learn the language of it. And then after learning the language of film, then you actually got to learn the production language and the... the compromises of that and see what survives. But for me, when it came with math and all that stuff, I needed like a purpose. So like, I'm like, algebra, where am I going to use algebra? Give me a reason why I'm going to use it, then I can find a purpose for it. And even when they switch it up into like, and like the problems they have, like in the, like the word problems and stuff like that, I was like, I don't really care about this because I can't relate. But then again, I do understand why they phrase it in like sort of like the dull language or non, you know, whatever, like civilian type of language, because not everyone's going to relate to the way I'm thinking. Does that make sense?
It's for a different way of thinking.
It's like more a cross-platform humanity that they have to comprehend. But geometry made sense because I'm like, okay, now we're filling in the...
You're like, I can see shapes.
And we got to get to this point. That all makes sense. It starts making sense later on, actually. The more you think about the logic of it, it all makes sense. It's just, you know, when you're there, you're just thinking about lunch. You're thinking about girls and wrestling and stuff like that. That's the problem. But when you go to college, you're there. You're like, I'm here to fucking be the best mathematician ever.
I didn't like math because it was only one answer. But then art
There's multiple answers in
but
math.
Art had like unlimited possibilities. Like there's not even a right answer in art. Even if you do something that's like really awesome and perfect, there could be like other solutions that you could have done that could have just been as perfect or different.
There's multiple answers in math.
I don't think so.
Yeah.
Usually it's like one answer, right?
No.
Well, give me an example.
How many ways can you get to four?
I mean, that, yes, there are multiple answers for that.
Yeah.
Okay, well, I never got any questions like that.
But that's the thing of math. It's just like Photoshop. It's, you know, you
want to
get...
There's different ways to get the effect get you want.
Yeah.
I guess that's
once you get
true.
To those advanced
But there's
advanced
usually
levels.
Only one answer most of it. It's like 1 + 1 equals... It doesn't equal 5. You know what I
when,
mean?
Like, when, but when does,
when can it equal five?
When does 1 + 1 = 5, right?
I mean, that would be the art part of it.
That is. When does 1 + 1 = 5?
It means, like, there's one creature that's actually 2, and then one creature is actually 3.
1 + 1 = 5 is basically what 1 represents 5. I don't know.
That makes no sense.
Well, if you get substitution, 1 + 1 = 5.
Oh, that's like, okay, here's
when
how you can
do it. When does 1 + 1 = 5?
It equals
when
like,
one is, when each one is 2.5. When one represents 2.5, that's when
there
it equals
you go.
5.
Or like when you use the word substitution, I thought of like a player on the field. So like they're like, well, this player is worth 2 people.
See, that's the one. That's the genius when you have the fun of math. When people are like
it's like Bridge of Spies. It's like this person's equal to 2 people.
Yeah, exactly. When does 1 + 1 = 5? That's what it is. When, you know, well, what if one is a boat and a boat has how many people in it?
See, but this gets crazy though, because like let's just say in high school there's a question that's like 1 + 1 = 5 or whatever, and then like or like let's say it says 1 + 1 = and then you write in 5, and then of course the teacher's gonna mark that wrong.
Yeah,
so what
because
if, then
because
what if you go up to the teacher and try to explain some scenario where it's like, no, this is actually that means that 1 = 2.5, and then
yeah,
like,
but you gotta
like the teacher would not fall for that.
Yeah, well, because also the teacher's like, well, I understand that you know Chinese, but we're speaking French right now. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They got to comprehend, like, well, yeah, that works, but that's a different test.
That's so a whole nother thing is, like, the languages. That did not compute into my brain.
Because it's a different language, that's why.
And I just was not going in. It was just, like, a full barrier. Even when I tried, like, I had tutors and stuff, and I was, like, seriously trying.
But see, this is the greatest thing about when you're, if I can find the joy. Like, I can understand if someone's like, man, I want to teach French. I love French. If you speak French, we can go to France and we can talk about stuff in French.
And we can eat baguettes.
But it's like you gotta go from the basics and you gotta build it up, and that's the tough part.
I mean, I would actually, I don't know how I would use it, but I would love to learn like other languages and just be like, you know, at least at a third grade level or something.
Imagine trying to teach someone to play like a guitar or a music instrument, and you're like, and the teacher is at like such a high level, but then he has to teach a person from
like
ground
ABCs.
Up. Yeah, and you're like, you know, it's like, yeah, it's literally teaching a baby to like talk,
mm-hmm.
you know. So you're like
you want
the person to be amazing, but you're like, but you got to have the patience to follow them through.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing though how people can grow.
And that's the thing, you know, being jack of all trades, it's being able to comprehend all these things. You don't have to be the best. You don't have to be the best of them, but you got to be at least damn well good enough to use it as a tool.
So what about, like, for example, the most successful people, it's almost like they're the second run of things. Like, for example, Facebook is huge right now. Everyone knows Mark Zuckerberg and all that. But really, they did not come up with Facebook. It really was MySpace that came first. So they basically took MySpace's plan and just made it better.
Well, it's just like everything else. Someone has an idea, we just
improve.
What's the next best part, you know? Because it, you know, just like cars, it's like, you know, you have those early cars, we have the crank it. Now the crank is a key, it's ignition.
Now they actually don't even have keys anymore.
Well, now
there's
now
a
because
button.
Now we have Bluetooth and all that stuff, so that skip that part, right?
The keyless cars are kind of freaky to me. It's almost like it's not even a car. Like, you just click a button. Like, you like press a button on the car and it starts it.
See, to
isn't
me,
that weird?
To me, I drove one of those, and there's a bit of a like detachment, because it doesn't feel like you're doing anything.
Yeah.
So I feel like sort of detached. But I understand also people like, they like automatic cars too. And they're like, they have that, not automatic, they like manual cars, because when you shift the gears, it makes you feel like you're doing something. But now it's just getting even less and less and less. You just, pretty soon you just hop in a car and it disappears. And
have you seen
location.
There's like cars now that like you can already start the car up in the parking lot and make it warm. Like, let's say it's cold outside and you're like, oh, I don't want to be freezing in my car. You can start up your car while you're not even in the car. You could be like still in the building.
Yeah, thank Tesla for all that stuff, the wireless transmission.
Well, Tesla is one of those people that got shafted, because I feel like he was a first, but then Edison gets all the glory for making it supposedly better after him.
Yeah, like.
So there you go. Like, it's like
Tesla is the Paul Heyman and Edison is the Vince McMahon.
So it's almost like even if no matter how inventive you are, someone else will come and take your idea and make it better.
Well,
so isn't it in a way it's like I love the inventive people, and I think that it's really awesome. But again, like we were saying earlier in this episode, like they're just gonna think you're crazy, and then somebody's gonna come around and be like, oh yeah, that is a good idea. Let's just take it and make it better. So like even no matter how
hard
you want to be inventive, hardcore, there's always going to be somebody that can make it better.
And also there's the strength in numbers too, because Edison had his team.
Well, that might be a different example, but it almost seems like people that will just take an idea now that, because no one ever wants to really truly be first, even though the internet's all like first, like in reality to actually do something first takes a lot of guts and a lot of balls, and a lot of people don't really want to do that. Even like when selecting concepts, a lot of clients don't want to pick the really out there concept that would be original and fresh and new. They don't want that. They want something safe that they've seen before. So like that takes that first step, but it's almost like the person that's in second place truly wins.
Well, almost in the third place, because you know, I was trying to watch the Dudley Boys Straight Outta Dudleyville documentary on the WWE Network, and then you know how they're famous for the tables, right? Mm-hmm. They're famous for
get the tables.
They're known for that, and people,
and also testify.
And people would always say like, "Oh, you're the guys that like invented like getting the tables," and they went out of their way to say like, "No, we were not the guys who originated the table breaking. The originator," and they went and said the originator of that was Sabu. For breaking tables, and the originator of the tag team of using tables was the Public Enemy. What the Dudley Boys did was they made it fun and cool to mm-hmm. take out the tables. They made it their own way with the Devon, get the tables. And then thus, they made it hipper. You know, they made it more iconic.
Yeah,
they weren't
they
the
have
first
a catchphrase with
yeah,
it.
Yeah, they weren't the first ones, but they were able to market it as such. So then they get known for that.
Or it's like Elvis Presley. He recorded a lot of black people's songs, and he made it accessible for everyone to listen to.
Now, is that wrong? I don't know if it's wrong
or not. I don't think
it's
necessarily wrong, but it should be noted. You know, like, and I'm not trying to discourage Elvis, because Elvis is awesome, and he, like, really united the nation through music. But in reality, it's like, he's just taking other people's songs and singing them. Like, you know, like...
Were those songs given to him?
But a lot of people thought he was black. Because back then, like, they didn't really have pictures as much. And so they, like, just listened to him and they thought he was black.
Were the songs given to him or did he just take them?
I don't know all the details. I'm pretty sure he'd somehow worked a deal with Colonel Parker or something. Who knows? I don't know.
Because if it's just, like, in vinyl, then they got some sort of permission. Blues hand down, something like that.
I don't
know
all the details of the legal stuff, but... In reality, I mean, he's like recording black people music, but a lot of back then, like there was like strictly black and white people, and like you didn't really listen to black people's music if you weren't black, you know?
He just wanted to play something that was hopping, and it just happened to be black people music.
Yeah.
Black people rhythm and blues, man.
But then it, you know, then.
I mean, white people's music is not really like that.
Especially not back then.
No, I don't even know what it was back then.
Wasn't it probably like, hello, my baby, hello, my yeah, daughter,
some hop,
ragtime girl.
Some hopscotch
sounding
stuff?
Some like ragtime, like white
but
ragtime.
It wasn't just like in a like, what's it called? Not Burn After Reading, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou? Where they were like, don't you find, oh, yeah. But that's still black people.
Yeah.
But I saw white people sing like that. But yeah, that's a black, yeah, yeah. Oh,
Sunhouse.
Getting down with the Sunhouse.
But that's like some gospel, like a gospel.
You got to go, it's gonna take you home down.
So really the lesson that we learned here is not to be a pioneer and to be a third place winner.
No. What we learned here is no matter what you do,
someone will take it and make it better.
Yeah, or be that person. That makes it better. I don't know.
So basically, steal other people's stuff and make it better.
Don't you find...
But then that kind of makes me sad about the invention part of it. It's like, I love invention. The inventors that are the really true first people.
First people.
Well, even with American Idol, a lot of the people in American Idol that win it aren't necessarily the true winners in life. A lot of the runners-up are... or like, you know, the tertiary winners are actually making the big waves in entertainment right now. So
no matter what,
hold on to that.
No matter what, someone has to dig the hole. Someone has to lead the way. Someone has to do that. If no one does that, we don't know where we can go.
It's true.
No matter what,
we need trailblazers.
People are finding out about Tesla, and people are finding out about trailblazers now. And sometimes it's better. You know what I mean? If you might not get your due then. I mean, just like any artist or creator, you might not get your due, you know, like at the moment it happens. But sooner or later, the truth, you can't stop the signal.
When you die, you'll get respect.
You can't stop the signal, man. You just cannot stop. You cannot stop the signal.
In this episode of the Carolyn and Joe Show, Joe tries to sing in the black voice. Isn't that what?
You've got to go. I've got to go down, down.
We're fans of Oh Brother. Well, you know, everything starts somewhere. That's what's kind of cool about life is, like, everyone kind of just starts out as babies, and then you get to see what everyone becomes.
Except those babies that already look like grown human beings.
Oh, God. It's scary.
And they got, like, all those muscles.
Like a Michelin man.
Yeah.
That's kind of scary. But, yeah, everyone kind of starts out equally, and then you see
No one starts out equally.
Of course, there's always like economic or factors or
status,
genes. But yeah,
do the people who are orphans, do they start out equally?
No, they don't.
Do the people who are put in the baskets and then put down the Nile, are they started?
From the angle I'm looking at it, is like everyone is born.
And the end.
You just take it from there, you know. And yeah, of course, like, let's say you were born on the same day that...
That's Jesus.
That, like, Northwest Kanye baby or whatever was born. Of course, that baby's going to be showered with money and attention. And then the baby next to it, somebody's just going to throw in a trash can because it's a girl.
And then that baby who has the more struggle has the more reason to try to find inspiration and new ideas, right?
Yeah.
Everyone needs their own angle on things.
I mean, I feel like sometimes maybe if you're, like... a child of a celebrity, like, would you feel like you wouldn't have to work as much?
What are you gonna
especially
do?
Early on,
it depends on what later on you're gonna try to find some sort of purpose. You're gonna have to rebel against something to find your purpose, and it's usually like your parents or your status. People need to rebel against something someday.
A lot of people try to like still keep up their parents' legacy. Like, for example, Sherry Lewis's daughter is doing all her puppetry, and or like Hank Williams III is performing country music, and just as like a tribute, they're not trying to be that person. The cycle continues.
That cycle will continue, ladies and gentlemen. Go out there, be some. CarolynandJoeShow.com. Go check me out at JoeCarabello.com. OneHyphenShots.com, MondayMistress.com. This show is brought to you by Straight Productions. Don't forget to check out Curls at Curl Studio. Curls-Studio.com. Curls-Studio.com/Curls. KarenBilewski.com. Straight J. Karen Bilewski. Ats. That's how it is, man. That's how it is. I don't leave you guys with this. You know that that idea that you have? Go do it, man. Go do it. Because if you don't, I will.
Or someone else will.
Yeah, and that someone else is me. My name is Joe.
And I'm Carolyn.
Be excellent to each other. Let them know, Carolyn.
You're bona fide.